name is Petter Griffin. I've been here all week thinking about consumption, and each session is not necessarily interconnected, though we can bring our experiences from the sessions to our conversations. And I view these as conversations. Most of what I'm trying to do is get us to talk about some of the prevailing dominant forms of desire and imagination and thinginess and consumption that we tend to do as a culture. And I will also point out, a little later tonight at 8:30, Marn and I will be talking about healthcare in relationship to some of these very same themes. So please consider that. I know Poland's fun and busy. Some people have a granddaughter who is in the town, or the what's it called here?
I don't know.
The lift? Is it called the lift? Is it town show? Town show. So tonight, I want to talk about shopping malls. And up to this point, we've talked about a couple things. We've talked about wages and income. We've talked about branding. We've talked about stories. And now, in some ways, I'm talking, or at least raising the questions about spaces. Because we are people who inhabit space. We are people who move from place to place. And in those places, we sort of do things and make them spaces. And malls are not the only way we shop, obviously, but for many of us, they sort of are cultural icons because of what they represent. And so the first thing I want to do before we get into it is go back to the John text that I pretty much used every day. And again, I'm using John because of Mary Emily's Bible study. And John 10:10 says, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." And I've been interested in the way the conversations have developed in terms of asking, what does abundance mean in relationship to the theme of each session? So when I bring up shopping and consuming things and places, how might this kind of biblical quotation help us frame thinking about shopping malls? Any thoughts here?
There's abundance of things in a shop.
Oh, interesting. So, okay, so in some ways it makes you think, wow, we have so much stuff. There's one kind of abundance, and it's material abundance. It's material things. It's things we can buy. It's things we can consume. Okay, that's good.
But shopping malls also work from the assumption of scarcity. Uh-huh. And so that you want to, and the prices go up if there are fewer things there, and so the market actually is made on the assumption of we make just a little less, and then the price will
absolutely
hold itself very well.
Absolutely. So in some ways, there's a different economy that comes with Christian practices. It starts from a place of abundance. It starts from a place of gift, which is God has given us enough. You know, for us this week in particular, God has given us the living water. It's the living water that makes us live, and it enables us to live. It quenches our thirst. It enables us to deal with our restlessness. It doesn't end it, per se, but it helps us make sense of it, meaning and purpose and things of that nature. So, different than scarcity. Other thoughts?
It seems interesting to read the quote in terms of what you're doing from where I think the majority of people at Holden come from, which is that, you know, Jesus promises this and yet we have all this extra stuff, and so isn't it so ironic that, you know, we have all this stuff and yet we have abundant life and abundance in different terms. But I just wonder how you read that if you don't have enough and you're living in poverty, and so the things that you need to literally live on a physical level are not abundant, and if you still are able to read that with hope, or whether you become bitter and ironic. I don't know if other people have.
Because you don't have material abundance, or don't
yeah,
have the choices
right,
that are attendant
you know,
with material
I mean,
abundance.
If you could still like feel that your life was abundant, even if you didn't have, I mean, because we can do it at two levels, right? Like, because we have enough, and so it's like overabundance at the material level, but I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it differs from person to person, but I mean, we're all reading that quote from a very specific perspective.
That's fair.
I find it, there's sort of this paradox at shopping malls, when I read this in light of thinking about shopping malls in particular, and that is that I think shopping malls are set up to make you feel like you do not have an abundance. I mean, that's what all the little displays are telling you, and oh, I could get that, oh, look at that neat gadget over there, and even if you come to get one thing, it turns out you're going to see 100,000 other things that can make you feel like you need that type of abundance. And at the same time, I almost always leave a shopping mall feeling dizzy and nauseous, sure, because of the overabundance, just like overstimulation, oh my gosh, get me out of here, I can't even find a way out of the parking lot.
Sure.
Anyway, so there's sort of that paradox of give me more and there's way too much.
Well, I'm glad we're thinking about this term abundance, because it's where I sort of want to move. And the first thing, I think I'm going to skip that, is I want to move to the idea of where we as Christians find our space. And I want to start with a quote from John 2. It says, Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jews then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. I mean, we as Christians, we use terms like journey, and we use terms like pilgrimage, and we often use terms like the Holy Land. But theologically, sort of the belly, as Mary Emily was describing it, is Jesus. The true space or place that we belong is in Jesus' belly, in some ways. So there is no one particular place that becomes holy, because in Christ God has fulfilled and restored all of creation. Meaning there's no one set place apart from it. So this room, which used to be a store, in the winters is a church, a gymnasium. At one point in the day is a yoga studio, another point in the day it's a basketball court. It performs play, but it's also a church. There's no one use then. Our sense of space is sort of different, especially than ancient Judaism, because we don't have a temple. We have Jesus, and Jesus is part of creation in a sort of through faith. We believe that this is what God has done. But it does raise questions about things in the world. How do we use material things? And for me, I find real interesting thinking about what shopping malls do, is shopping malls take things that, amidst this scarcity, the economy of scarcity, they try to sell you. And the church, it takes things and makes it part of our experience of God, our signs of God. And so I want to sort of contrast today the idea of sort of church as a sacred place and malls as a sacred place. Because in many ways, they use similar things to do what they're doing. But what does a church want to do? It wants to form us as Christians, so that we practice our Christianity in all that we do. What does a mall make you want to do?
Shop.
It wants to form you as consumers. I forget where it was. Katie, you might be able to help me. The other day, we were shopping. And we're with our daughter, Thisbe, and she's almost 3, and she's running around. And the saleswoman said, "Oh, training to be a shopper."
Ooh.
Do you remember that? Where was that?
Yeah, I don't want to remember this.
No, it's not.
No, it was like Kmart or something. We were buying her, we were in there buying her, looking for Crocs, fake Crocs for her pull-ups.
And I'm suggesting there's a tension between being a consumer of things in the world and being a Christian. So I want to first start with an idea of church, and this comes from a guy named Gordon Lathrop, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Lutheran tradition or familiar with. And I'm wondering if someone wants to read this, and we can talk through it a little bit. Anyone?
"The things around which we gather in church are matters of concern, events, and objects put to use. They focus our meeting, itself a thing. Moreover, they propose to our imaginations that the world itself as a center, we experience the idea that there is a world, an ordered pattern of meaning and not simply a chaos. This experience may largely arise from the interactive patterns of things.
So what are some initial responses when you hear this or hear this?
Well, he's paying attention to the context of our presence. Well, we bump up against a chair, or the physical spacing of the chairs, or the lighting, or the way we interact in that physical context. And he's suggesting that there is an order which conveys or helps us get into a pattern of meaning and not simply chaos.
Good. What do you think he means by things here?
Is he talking about the liturgical year that
Absolutely.
Gives a rhythm to our
Absolutely.
Lives?
Absolutely.
And as a community, we get meaning in this rhythm.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's a pattern that kind of orders our lives
absolutely.
Beyond days and weeks and months.
Absolutely. So part of it, we could just say calendar. There's a church calendar thing.
Right.
Sort of defines where we are amidst our relationship to the wider context, the wider story of God's actions in Christ. What other things?
Well, I think he says that things matter, the physical world does matter.
Absolutely.
I think it does matter how we shape our space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So space, architecture, thinking, being intentional about what a space is, though at the same time, you know, this wasn't designed as a church space, a liturgical space, and those of us who've been here for 19 winters know that this space becomes beautiful and powerful in terms of a thing of God, if you want to think about that. So, yeah, Mike.
I'm looking at the phrase in there, an ordered pattern of meaning, and not simply a chaos. And I'm thinking in two directions. One is I'm thinking about how malls do that. And then also thinking of the conversation we had before dinner about finding meaning in the death experience. But this I think strong human desire for meaning and not unexplainable chaos.
Good. So we crave it, and in some ways how we relate to things helps us both find that order but reflects the ordered meaning that we think is sort of inherent in God's
creation. We're
going
to find it somewhere. We're going to try to find it somewhere.
Things help us order ourselves all the time. You know, we joke about who's got assigned seats in where they sit in the sanctuary.
Yeah.
Or in a classroom, students will come and sit in the same place. Moving is such a chaotic experience because you have to decide over again where you put the peanut butter. You know, things that you don't have to think about most of the time. So we orient ourselves around where we put them.
We know that when we just moved.
Our house isn't unpacked, so
yeah,
we don't know where that is.
And the former pastor at Holden is busy painting it as we speak.
Yes.
We hope. We hope. So I'm surprised no one brought up word, bread, wine, or thing. I mean,
we
are
earthly things,
yeah.
And make them symbols of something
Absolutely.
More than they actually are.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what gathers us, communion, Euch, baptism. I mean, we take these things in the world, we take light, and we take space, and we see them in light of God's gift. We see them in the light of creation. And by doing that, we find a sense of order and place in the world. That ultimately through the church, and especially seeing ourselves as the body of Christ, is actually what the church is called to be. As deeply, deeply formed in this pattern, this order, this sense of purpose.
I'm sort of struck though, you know, as we read the Gospels and we think about Christ's life, how unthingliness his ministry was, you know, how, you know, other than the river or going out to places, you know, it seems like he wasn't attached to things
sure.
at all. He didn't need to be in the temple to do that. And he didn't need to have stuff. He didn't need to leave anywhere. He didn't need to put on robes or do anything.
Sure.
But then where does that lead us? Yeah.
But as you say that, I'm wondering whether there's a temporal decay in our ability to recall the thingliness, so that if the reports about Jesus that are in the Bible were actually concurrent with Jesus' life, maybe there had been more recounting of the context of the things in which, I mean, the news accounts of something right now versus the news accounts of something 100 years ago are very different. They sort of drop a lot of the thingliness in order to get at the central messages.
Of course, the theological argument is that ultimately we as sinners have sort of lost our ability to experience God in a profound level without some type of signs. I mean, that's what the sacraments are. If you look at sort of sacramental theology, that why do we gather around word? Why do we gather around the Eucharist? It's because we've turned away from God, and we're not really sure where to find God until God comes down and says, look, I'm living water. I'm the bread and wine. I'm the water. So
it's right, we don't hear about Jesus having things, no place to live, and, you know, not attached to stuff. But his stories and his examples are all about things, you know, pointing to things in the world to teach.
Well, and arguably, obviously, the Christian tradition is a widely divergent one. I mean, this week you have the choice of something like this, or I'm sort of approaching this largely from a Lutheran perspective, but you also have sessions on heresies. And it's not one stream within the development of Christianity now, which most of us know, because we have friends who are probably Methodists and Presbyterians and Baptists and maybe Quakers, and that's just within Christianity itself. So there's a lot of diversity amongst these different Christian traditions. But to me, the main thrust of what I'm trying to do is, again, say that we as Christians use things to help us find order. We as Christians see them in the light of what God has given us in Christ. And we imagine, then, a particular form of life, and we enact it in our worship and in our liturgy and in our spaces. And I think in some ways, and what I'm going to do here is say, so do the designers of malls. Many of the same things that we use in worship, light, water, food, religion, are contained in the mall. And I'm also curious, how many of you are from Minnesota? I know this is a number. So how many of you have not been to the Mall of America? But I'm sort of using the Mall of America as a test case. Partially because malls have sort of hit a rough patch, both in the economic downturn and the fact that more people don't think they're authentic. So a lot of malls now have been repurposed to main streets. I don't know if this is anyone seen this.
Exercise centers.
No, what they do is they rip out the mall and they turn the stores into sort of storefronts. So you have some of the same stores you had in the mall. They just face a fake main street that people then sort of walk up and down, and you park behind the stores. And it's more authentic. It's more sort of American. the fact too that we also live in the age of the internet. So shopping itself is kind of but Mall America is important because they're actually expanding it. They wanted to do $1 billion expansion, but they didn't get money from the state. And now I think it's something like $600 million now. And in fact, right over here, they're building a huge hotel so that you can actually stay closer to the shops when you fly in. And the Mall of America was built in 1992. I was a college student. I remember all the pageantry that went on when it was built. Just every paper had it on the front, and they talked about how many people would fly in from Japan for the weekend and then fly back home after they shopped. It's right now 4.2 million square feet.
Why would the state be funding
this? Money.
What jobs?
Football stadium.
John. Frankly, it probably makes more jobs in the football stadium that the state of Minnesota is spending $400 million to build.
Right.
Wow.
So, and let's be honest. Think about the name of the mall.
Yeah.
This isn't just mall in the northwest corner of Minneapolis, or south. I guess it would be north central Bloomington. The Mall of Bloomington. This is the Mall of America. I mean, think about naming. Naming's obviously important in the Bible. It matters that Abraham was once Abram and becomes Abraham. He's Abram of God. This is the Mall of America. This isn't just a piddly diddly mall. This is something that every American should be proud of and should come see. This is the culmination of our civilization. So, there's a text that actually looks at shopping malls, and it's called Shopping Malls and Other Sacred Places. Also looks at Disneyland too, which is really fascinating. And in this chapter, it's by a guy named John Paul, and he says this: malls, they disorient us by using natural and religious symbols and spatial patterns in an enclosed indoor setting, and then reorients us towards one or another of the purveyors of goods.
Can you explain exactly how that happens?
That's what we're doing.
Awesome.
I actually have, for once, examples.
Yes.
I tend to. I like the conceptual stuff. I'm learning. So first thing I want to think about is community. And I'm sticking with John. And I found a quote this afternoon from John that said, "This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever. And the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." In some ways, this quote from Jesus is suggesting what unites all of us as Christians?
His body.
Yeah, our participation in the body of Christ, the thingliness of Christ, and experiencing the thingliness in our worship. So I've contrasted that with some pictures of the Mall of America. And I'm wondering what your reaction is in terms of what you see, and for those of you who have been there, or malls in general, like, what do you see that the communal elements here to this mall space? Anything that strikes you? And I'll just tell you, I suppose, first, is this is the Chapel of Love. You can get married. They perform other ceremonies. It's their official ministers. I think there's various people who actually serve as ministers and chaplains there. So I think that's upstairs next to the food court. This is the center of the mall. So you have entertainment. And this actually is the rotunda. And for instance, I think when like Justin Bieber came, he signed autographs right here. Often there's pep rallies. I think there's a pep rally for the stadium, the Minnesota Vikings.
That picture on the right has sort of cathedral elements to it.
Okay, cathedral, say more.
It kind of draws you up. And it's that big space, like when you walk into one of the European cathedrals, just draws you up.
It also introduced the U.S. women's hockey team in that area, too.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they had a big thing.
In some ways, what you're pointing out, this is the public space today, in terms of the commons. In fact, St. Olaf actually has a wonderfully big commons, a building for everyone on campus. And you walk in, and it actually was designed by mall designers. And it was designed intentionally to replicate something like this. Because the assumption of the architect who designed this was that kids who come to St. Olaf now, they're students, what's the public space that they know when they go hang out? The mall. So what do you want to do with your buildings on campus? You want to reflect what they know is the public space. That's their sense of community. And arguably, what's the sense of community gathered around? I mean, no one's pointed that out. This is Barnes & Noble. This actually used to be a train shop.
I think it's a candy shop.
It's a candy shop? I mean, here you see, this is Best Buy. fact, I think Best Buy sponsors this
Where's
area.
Where's the Starbucks?
Yeah.
That's the one that's right in there.
I think there might be one right over here.
Yeah, it's not close by there. Oops. Caribou's on level 3.
And it strikes me in looking at that right image, if we're thinking of that as a cathedral, I often think of that architecture in cathedrals. The whole idea is it draws you right up off the floor and sort of your eyes are not looking at the people around you, you're looking at the architecture way up. And so if this is our commons, I think it'd be really easy to just walk through that and run into a whole bunch of people and not even see them. Because your eye is drawn to all of this absolute overstimulation and everything up above. So if that's our new commons, then it's an uncommon common. I mean, we don't...
Sure. Well, I think it's also interesting, A, you have the fact that all these are tied together by shopping. Again, shopping is... It's not Jesus' body who unites this community. It's shopping. And what can you do in this community? You can enjoy God. You can get married. You can... I imagine they would do baptisms, I suppose, if you wanted to.
Do they provide spouses in there?
It is true. This is an aside, I suppose, but I think... In the late 90s, the mall, maybe it wasn't the mall, but they ran a contest, and they randomly chose a person and then his 5 friends. And what they did is they held a contest at the mall for him to get married. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know his bride. And she shook, and his friends would interview people as they came through. And they chose one for him, and he married her. Anyone else remember that?
Yes, I do. And I think as far as I know, they're still together and they have kids.
All I remember is after their honeymoon, they came back and they said they consummated it in every country they went to in Europe. So they saw
that's good to know. Always in a mall.
Always in a mall. And secondly, you have religion, you have shopping, there's a food court, you have entertainment on the inside, you have physical activity because you get to walk, and maybe you also get to ride the roller coaster. I mean, you've kind of everything you need to do in one space.
Well, and it's healthy and natural with all those trees.
Yeah.
And we're going to go there. We're going to go there, too. And that's absolutely right. And it's all united in shopping.
One of the things that strikes me is that, I mean, marketplaces have always been common gathering places in every history and every culture, and we can go to any developing country and find a marketplace where there's an exchange of goods and services. But one of the things that strikes me about this kind of marketplace is that people are not selling their own wares. So everybody is, and this struck me actually, I was working in West Virginia and I was organizing a health fair. And I had to go and find local merchants who would donate prizes for various things at this health fair. And every single merchant that I went to in this mall was not in a position to make a decision about whether they could give me anything.
No,
because nobody actually was, they weren't working for themselves. They were working for corporate offices that were headquartered somewhere else. Yeah. And so they actually couldn't be in relationship to the community. So
that's
if you
true.
Go into these shops, you meet people who are working retail and they're getting paid $4.50.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up too, because a lot of, but less so in Europe now, but if you Moroccan souks or something, I mean, part of the marketplaces is the interaction you have with shopkeepers.
Right.
Yeah, with
right.
people.
The bartering and the
right.
conversations that you have over
right.
the things that
yeah.
they sell. First thing you do when you're in Turkey before you buy a rug is you sit down with the guy and you have a cup of tea. I mean, these are fixed prices. I mean, that.
Well, there's something unique here, too, that you can. I went to Mall America once, and there's nothing there you couldn't buy in my part of the country, anyplace else.
Because they're all franchises that are headquarters.
So, oops, this picture was a lot bigger at one point. On to another thing, water. Jesus and John says, on the last day of the festival, I'm sure most of you have heard this one. The great day while Jesus was standing there, he cried out, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and let the one who believes in me drink. As the scripture has said, out of the believer's heart shall flow rivers of living water." Finally got a way to work in what Marianne was saying. And for those of you who've been going to the sessions, I mean, it is thinking about water, both metaphorically but also physically.
And we as Christians, what do we use water for? Baptism. And what does baptism do?
Drink into community.
What else does it do? He washes us.
Washes away sin.
It transforms us. Mm-hmm. You know, it says you are a person of God who has been renewed and replenished in this living water of Jesus. Water obviously is important then in, as a thing that gathers us in the Christian tradition. Should I make that picture a little bigger?
No, we
can see it. This is a view now in the Mall of America. And this is a fountain. And you'll notice it's attached to trees, and you're looking down. But most malls will have some type of water in the mall. Anyone sort of know what often is attached to the water to? Maybe not a good way to ask the question. What do people often do with the water?
They throw money
in it.
Wishing well.
Well, not only wishing well, but at least according to one person I read, think about what you're doing. Okay, where does the money go that you put in the mall? Well, arguably there's a sign that says all the money from this.
Down the drain.
Usually there's some sign that said all the money this month will go to Easter Seals.
Yes.
All this money will go to... So you go to Nordstrom's. I think Nordstrom's is right here. You spend $400 on a new suit. And then you want to go get Starbucks coffee. You walk past the fountain and says, here's my quarter. I mean, the intentionality, at least the critique, is that in some ways... you're washing your sins away. Because water represents cleanliness and replenishment and nourishment and transformation. And you then have this opportunity to participate in something similar. I don't know how convincing that is, but at least made you think. They're using water. We use water. We associate water with certain things. It's not a mistake that they're putting water in the there. They want you to have certain associations so that you feel better about becoming a consumer.
There's another fountain there. My parents, when they were alive, used to take my son and their other two grandchildren a lot, and there's a smaller one where water comes out. But that was the thing that my parents did with their grandchildren. They would walk by, grandpa would give them, a nickel or a quarter or whatever, and throw it in there. I mean, that was their tradition every single time they went. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, something that until the day my parents died, they would suffer.
Interesting. I'm certainly not saying don't when you shop. Don't want to give them a quarter. Part of what I'm hoping we get out of a session like this is thinking about these spaces and how they try to make us into certain kind of people. And question whether that is necessarily reflects what we're called to be as Christians. And I couldn't find a particularly good quote from John, but Genesis and nature, trees. Genesis 2, out of the ground the Lord God made a grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Trees. Plants. I mean, you saw it, obviously you saw it here too. What are some initial reactions when I pair it with this idea from Genesis?
It's a little more like the Hanging Towers of
Babylon. Sure, yeah. I actually thought that too.
It's not out of the ground.
It's not out of the ground?
It's out of the air.
You won't die if you eat of it. You'll just like God. You can have some of this. You'll know good and evil.
Well, when we see trees too, obviously, or often in religious dimensions, it often is connected to the idea of growth and richness and verdant. But is there a word like verdancy? That's a word. Plentifulness. You see a dead tree, you see death, but you see a live tree, what do you see? Healthiness, vitality. And so you have water. You have this sense of different types of spaces that you can participate in as you go through the mall. And then you have all these sort of symbols of vitality, health, and nature. I mean, it's, in a lot of ways, it's designed to make you feel sort of that this is natural for me to be here. It's okay if I spend
stay a long time.
Exactly.
It's not much different outside.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it is better outside.
Or super hot.
Yeah. As much, there are times, and for those of you who had small children, I mean, and Thisbe's only been in the mall once with my parents, but it was in March or something. And it's, 28 degrees outside, snow on the ground, and you have a 2.5-year-old.
Yeah.
Mall actually isn't that bad a place to go.
Well, and I
have to admit,
I don't know if this is natural life, the life sustaining the malls back where my parents live in Pennsylvania open up early in the morning, so seniors can go
absolutely.
Around,
that's true.
Walk around. Even
and
before
this
the
is
stores
true here,
are open.
The Mall of America, you already see joggers that do that all.
My parents were part of the Mall Walkers program there. I mean, that's probably the only way they would have got out and
mm-hmm.
walked around.
True for my dad.
It's a place for homeless people to hang out in the wintertime, too.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Do they let them in?
They do in our town.
I don't know. They're very actually restrictive of people. They have security guards at all the gates, partially because they've had shootings in the mall. And I know there's a curfew now for young adults, that they can't go to the mall after 10 or something like that. So. Any other thoughts about sort of natural life and the healthiness of shopping?
Well, I'm cynical about it in the sense that there's been lots of studies of productivity in workplaces, and people tend to be much more productive in spaces that have a window out to a natural scene with trees or water or just natural light. And even just having a poster that looks like a window going outside increases productivity
mm-hmm.
really substantially.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally affects the brain. I mean, it has to do with affective seasonal disorder and those kinds of brain functions and attention, your ability to focus, all those kinds of things. So it seems to me like the science behind this would absolutely underline what they're doing. That it would physically or even physiologically predispose people to be more focused, more effective workers in their consuming because of the way that they've produced these spaces inside that make you feel like you're in touch with outside.
I'm not familiar.
And I'm absolutely sure the architects know about those studies.
I'm too. And I couldn't find a very good map of the Mall of America too, but anyone had to go to the bathroom there?
Mm-hmm.
Was it difficult to find the bathrooms?
It's kind of hard.
No.
It's difficult in one sense that they aren't in regular spots in the mall. They put it in different spots in different sides of the mall to make sure you walk the whole length of the mall. It's also true with escalators. There's not one escalator going all the way up. You're forced to walk. There's a little, the easiest escalator is around that plaza. But you still have to walk. I think the escalator's like over here, and then you come up, and then you go over here, and then you come up, and then you have to come over here. Because they want you to see the mall. They want you to feel that you are a part of this space. So, I'll talk a little bit about this too. I mean, coming at it from the Lutheran perspective, I'm not trying to say malls are evil. We believe that all these are good gifts. It's much more about the intention behind them, what they're designed to do, and also really how do we use them?
Well, don't you think, I mean, as an architect or pretty much anyone, it's very easy to have this set of values and ideals that you sort of live by and to kind of
put them to bed when you walk in your workplace. I mean, when you think about how many nurses and doctors smoke, and yet are counseling their patients not to smoke. I mean, you know, for these people, in their defense, you know, as architects, they're, whoever they're designing for is going to want them to design the building that's going to make them the most money, and that's their job, and that's what Mr. Client over here is paying me to do. So am I going to do that, or am I going to preach about the values of, you know, making it easy for people to go to the bathroom? I mean, I think about that a lot, and I don't know the way around it, but it seems to me that that's what we, a lot of us, sort of tend to do.
Well, I think most of us want to be successful. I think most of us want to be,
want to do
achieve
good
things, and this certainly for an architect is going to be a, quite a feather in a cap.
Oh, and my question is, okay, so they're trying to make it attractive, and it might be fake, but who would go to shop in a cape? Or why not make it attractive?
Sure.
But isn't it, I mean, it's interesting that casinos do the opposite.
Yes.
Right? Like, when you go to a casino and there are no windows, and there's none of this, right? Like, it's the...
And the Guthrie Theater. much more pleasant common space at the Mall of America. I think there's variety and openness and light and things there than the Guthrie. And I don't know that Mill City Commons has bad architecture, I think. Sorry, that's just me.
Or you have to go outside.
You have to go to that one place.
Yeah.
The cantilever.
That's very beautiful.
I think
and whether or not the farmer's market created at Mill City Commons, is that a better place if there are people who come in and rip open big boxes of Dole bananas and sell them that way? I mean, I just don't know if that's a better way for us to, you know, is that more authentic?
Right.
Good question. Good question.
My experience at Mall of America, I've only been there a couple times, but I find it to be an absolutely impossible place to shop. I mean, usually when I shop, I'm looking for a pair of shoes. And you can go, you can spend days going to all the shoe stores in Mall of America. I find it not a shopping place.
Yeah, I would agree that it's, I mean, if I go there, I'm not probably going for one particular thing. I mean, I go, well, a lot of times to get exercise. You know, you walk around, I'm more browsing. I wouldn't go there if I'm looking for some, I'd go to a smaller mall, like Rich Day.
Well, I just go there for specific things. Because otherwise
really?
I'm overwhelmed.
Well, yeah.
It's the closest shopping center to my house.
But it's hard. I mean, there's so many choices sometimes. Or if I go just, I go to one specific place and then you get out of there.
Yep.
Or other times I'm not even really going to buy anything, but I just...
Of course, are you a hunter or a gatherer?
Oh,
I think this was from Seinfeld. There was some line in Seinfeld about some shoppers. Maybe it was about the remote control, but I've always thought about shopping. Some shoppers are like hunters, where they know exactly what they want. They go in, they come out, and some are just gatherers. They're just going to go.
Okay. It's hard to go just for one thing, because then you got to know where it is. Because if you, you know, we usually park at one particular place, and if it's not there, you're walking all the way around, you go to one place.
Yeah.
That's why my dad always knew. I'd always have to call him and say, okay, do you remember where this one is? So then I'd know where to park.
I actually think that's an important thing with the architecture, that these places are not designed to be efficient, effective places to shop.
No, that's true.
They're designed to be places to be, where you actually go, and they're creating an experience for you.
And it's a destination.
It's a destination, right, that, you know, people actually go on vacation to shop.
Well, I
think the thing that I'm struggling with is that my experience of being in a mall is that it's not a place I want to be. I actually don't like being in them. And the reason is that they make me feel bad about myself. I feel like I'm underdressed. I feel like my hair is bad. I feel like I don't have the stuff I need. I feel not good enough in some way. And so
yeah,
I always have this like sense of dread when I'm in a mall and I want to leave.
So how do you deal with that? In the mall, how do they want you to deal with that?
Buy things that makes you feel better.
Sure. So
but I don't know why that happens to me. Like, what is it about the architecture that makes me feel like self-limited and like I actually just want to leave?
Well, being a teenager, that's like a place for you to hang out. You go to the mall to just stay. I'll probably leave the mall and, well, I've bought a smoothie and that's it, but I'll be there for 2-3 hours just walking around with my friends and looking at things. And like my parents always tell me, well, why are you going to the mall? To be with my friends? Well, you need to go if you need something. You have something specific that you need to go get. Well, but nobody else is going to go get something. They're either going to hang out with their friends or going to be with other people.
And to be seen.
What?
And to be seen.
Yeah.
I think that's also ball culture. It's, you know, you go there, you see, you're in public. It's that common space. No, I think
and
that's
how do you feel when you leave?
It's tiring and you're just like, it's a lot of work just to just go and like look at everything. You're not just, instead of just finding one specific thing, and you're, there's everything that you have to look at, not just one store or one place.
So you feel tired.
Yeah.
Then why is this so successful? Why do 40 million people come visit the mall? And clearly if they're expanding it, it's profitable, immensely profitable.
Because we believe we need more stuff.
We're thirsty and hungry.
You, back there, not thanks for that.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, they are selling an experience, and I think they sell you some hopefulness that maybe if I can get the right outfit, then I can feel good about myself. I know that what I love about the Mall of America is the amusement park, because I love amusement parks, and in the middle of winter.
Absolutely.
I can go in there, even if it's not a sunny day, they've got it set up so it's sunny in there.
Absolutely.
And I feel like I'm in the midst of summer amusement park, and so that's a good thing for me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But the thing that I've noticed, whether it's about the Mall of America or Disney World, is their ability to try to they draw you in, and they try to, not that everybody has a good experience, but they try to help you to feel good about yourself. I think it's different at the mall because it's not one owner telling everybody how to treat you. So you're dealing with a lot of different property owners or store owners. But I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around this because I'm thinking in the consumer world, they're trying, like you're saying, they're trying to do the same thing that I think we in the church hope that we would do, that we would give you abundance, we'd give you a purpose. And yet sometimes I do feel like they do a much better job than we in the church.
It's a great,
and I don't know if it's...
I want to go back here. That's great. I mean, could we go, the things around which we gather in the mall are matters of concern, events, objects put to use. They focus our experience itself a thing. Moreover, they propose to our imaginations that the world itself has a center. We experience the idea that there is a world, an ordered pattern of meaning and not simply a chaos. This experience may largely arise from the interactive patterns of things.
Up here.
I definitely think that the mall or Disneyland gives you a consistent experience. And I think it's like people like consistent experiences. They like to know what they are going to, you know, the patterns or not the chaos. Why does somebody travel and they always go to McDonald's, even though when there might be a lot of other wonderful choices in place, but they would go to the same restaurant because they want that consistent experience. And it's clean, it's warm, it's, you know, light.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it, and
it's familiar, it's comfortable.
I mean, that's, it's comfort, it's comfortable.
It totally is. It's the only uncomfortable thing is I don't have the right hair. I don't have the right clothes. I can get that there, and then everything will be all right. Whereas you go to church and you think, oh my God. I mean, sometimes it's, I mean, you get a certain level of comfort, but you also, it can really push you up against a wall, and you can be confronted with some serious difficulties that I don't see so much at the mall.
You know, can I just, I wonder, you do youth gatherings, right? These mountaintop experiences, and you come to Holden. No, but Holden's a little different, but you do these, and I wonder sometimes with like malls, like that's what they're hoping. And so you go there, and I think the thing about church is that, for me, church is a place where you get grounded in reality. Because sometimes life is boring. And not to say that church is always boring, but it's common. It's more, and it can be a better place for us to really figure out who we are. Because, I mean, part of what I'm hearing from what people are saying is you can go to the mall and maybe you can have a place to hang out with friends, maybe you can buy that thing, but it's not really who we find who we are. But I think in our church experience, hopefully that's what's happening for us.
Can I talk, or do you have a response?
Well, I was going to respond to that, that it seems like in some ways, it's not that we go to church to sort of be reminded of the person that we're supposed to be, or that God expects us to be. And I think we go to the mall because all of these different stores, it's not just who we're supposed to be fashion-wise, but it's also hair, and it's also shoes, and it's also food, and it's also... And so all of that together is also a different version of who we're supposed to be, right? Like, it's two different versions of who we're supposed to be, you know? And I think, you know, on good days, we all want to say that, like, the only person that we want to be is the one that God wants us to be, right? Or the one that our religion says that we should be. That's the person we should focus on. But we all have that foot in the other world, and... So, you know, part of the reason I kind of want to see, like, even if I'm not going to buy that, I kind of want to know what's in style. Like, I want to know the version, like, even if I'm not going to choose it, I want to know who it is that the world is telling me I'm supposed to be at this point in time, even if it makes me feel bad.
I was just going to say, I maybe different language, what you just said, Kata, too, that in some ways you're saying you go to the mall and you experience this scarcity. You experience your inadequacies. The hope from church is you go to church and you experience God's abundance, something that you experience yourself abundantly. That, you know, in some ways they use things very differently, you know, different values, different assumptions, but Mike, I'm going to...
I was going to go back to why are malls successful if we're still... Is that still relevant?
Sure.
I'm wondering if one reason they're economically successful and have us come is they have figured out how to tap into celebration. And it celebrates both the buying of things, which at least many of us participate in one way or another. But they're sort of the ultimate expression of that celebration. And you can also celebrate if you find either what you're looking for or the right thing you didn't know that you needed. And
interesting.
And then one sort of coded to that, and that's sort of a triumph, celebration and triumph. And then sort of a little footnote, the designer of the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., his primary claim to fame before that was mall design. And that probably memorial, more than any other in Washington, is very much about the triumph of our country, the celebration and triumph.
Interesting.
You know, I think some of it might be what the image the mall has and whether it's the image that we want so much. I can go to REI and I can shop forever. And I can look at their clothes and I can try them on, and it makes me imagine me being more of the kind of person that I want to be already anyway. I happen to not want to be the kind of person that hangs out at the mall in terms of the glamour and the whatever, that's not who I am. But the right shop for me does what that Mall of America is doing for somebody else.
It's interesting to bring that up, that there's a Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, and it to me it's shaped like a cathedral. It has a huge arching roof.
An REI.
Oh, did I say
it's
an REI?
Yes,
actually, very close to the
mall.
Yeah.
That's to accommodate the climbing wall.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The lady in purple, I'm going to piggyback on something. You said Holden is not. I'm just curious. How many people have bought something in the store?
Yeah, good
question. Not yet.
There's no ice cream in the store. I mean,
yeah.
I have, but like, how many people have gone into this store?
I didn't know the store.
Well, does even Holden have some of the same elements, or is Holden's store, in fact, we talked to the store manager, and he thought it would be fun for me to ask a question, is like, how would you redesign the store if you could? Should you sell candy?
If it's chocolate.
I mean, should Holden have a store?
Well, I had a conversation with the person there because I was looking for a shirt, and I was saying I was glad that they had women's sizes because I like to buy stuff from places I've been, but men's t-shirts just don't do it for me. I mean, they're just boxy. And so he said he had promised his wife that he would have these women's sizes. Because then, I mean, they fit better. You know, and I do want to bring something home so I can show people. I was at Whole Foods. You know?
An experience of going back to the market.
Yeah, good memory.
Yeah. I mean, should the Whole Foods still work? Or should we be completely free from that kind of consumptive? Or is it just part of our life? And there's better ways to do it. And frankly, I think the Whole Foods is a lot better way to do it, at least for me, than the Mall of America.
But where does the profits go? You know, I figure it's supporting the, you know, to some degree, supporting the village.
And the other thing is, you know, I hate malls, and I hate, you know, that you can go to a mall, and you can go to Mall of America and Mall in Portland and buy the exact same thing. I don't like that about malls, but I sort of equate the Holden store to, you know, some little local shop that I might go to on my street. It's more, it's just, I don't know, I hate to call it more real, but to me it's...
You know, the books, you know something about the books you find there might be ones, you know, are
a
certain character.
It's different, I think, than to me.
Yeah, it's not so artificial.
Yeah.
The mall seems very artificial.
Well, and here, there aren't a lot of options. And if you actually needed something, if you,
if all your clothes were dirty, you need to shirt.
Or Potty Patrol.
Yeah. Well, there's Potty Patrol. Yeah, that's true.
Isaiah has many finds in pipe, piano, camp stove.
So let's come to the stores go, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the Holden store, the guest experience at Holden is significantly subsidized by private donations to Holden and the profit from the store and from the snack bar. And so the money that's made is just folded back into the enterprise of making this nonprofit ministry work. And that's a really different sort of context for a store to operate. I mean, if you have enough money, you can add $600 million addition, then you're making some profit, I would say. I don't know what the total rental payment is for all the, if you combine the rental of all the stores at Mall of America, and who owns it, I don't know who owns it.
And there was a huge battle between two families in the early 2000s, but I'm not an expert on the mall, but it's just such an interesting thought process. So, yes.
Someone else is saying that they don't like malls because it's not like the sort of person they want themselves to be, but they like REI because that's sort of like how they want them to be. And I think the Holden store, at least for me, is sort of similar. Like, I get a t-shirt because that sort of reminds me, like, I want to be more like what Holden is like. So, sort of like a mall in that way, but just like different.
Well, and I do think one of the, I'm hoping part of what comes out of the session for us as the people here is to recognize that we do need to be intentional about our shopping habits. And again, I don't think, I'm not trying to suggest that the mall is outside of God's grace. That's not the tradition we've been hearing. It certainly can be used. I think the real problem, at least as I'm presenting it, is it tries to make you into a particular type of person. One that cares about the things that the mall has to offer you. And some of those are worthwhile. I agree with you about amusement park and winters and things like that. But it can be problematic. And I think too often our culture does not concern itself with the problematic nature of that type of shopping and that type of massive structure, that cathedral to consumerism. And I do hope that we as Christians think about being intentional about where we get our things from. And we care, and it takes more work. But that's also what God calls us to be, to care about our relationships, to care about who we buy things from, to care about what we put on our bodies, to care about how we imagine ourselves to be. So a little after 7:15, I'll be glad to talk further if you'd like, but I thank you for your time. And thank you.